Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. And oh, how I wish you could be in the studio with me today, because if you were in the studio, you would be taking some deep breaths and taking in the aroma of some wonderful baked bread. Ulekaka, as a matter of fact, baked by Paul Novak, baking instructor in the continuing education program at Madison Area Technical College. He's the author of A Baker's Dozen of Daily Breads and More. And he has a recipe out in a new book that I'm sure we'll talk about too as we go along today. Teaches some courses. We'll talk about that as well. And of course, we'll talk about breads and baking. And he will be happy to answer your baking questions when you join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Are there some treats that you make every year because you want it yourself or others expect you to make it? Do you tend to stay with the old favorites or do you try new things? Join in. Let us know. And Paul Novak, welcome back.
Thanks, Larry.
Well, here we are. Over 20 years we've been doing this.
Yes, yes. And I've been bringing the ulekaka for the last number of years.
Yeah, and it is always wonderful. and it's no exception this year. It's just gorgeous.
We're waiting for the technology that will transmit the smells, right?
Oh, man, would that be something? It smells so wonderful. Well, there are people who are wondering, what is a ulekaka? So let's talk about that.
Yeah, Yule for Christmas and kaka meaning cake, but really it's more of a bread, but it's a very sweet bread. So it's got, it's a celebration bread, so it's got extra eggs, extra sugar, a fair amount of butter, and made with milk also. But the flavoring is cardamom.
Cardamom, yeah. And you can taste it.
And you can smell it, you can taste it. Yes,
oh,
yes. So it's Norwegian, it's Swedish, it's a Scandinavian Christmas bread.
Yeah, so do you prepare it? The ingredients are a bit different. Do you prepare it differently than you would?
I make it pretty much like a regular bread, but I don't want to get as hard a crust. I want it to be moist. It also has raisins. And what's helpful with raisins is to plump them first, so that they don't take moisture out of the dough. And if you're really fancy, you could plump them in brandy, let's say.
Ooh!
you'll lose a lot of the alcohol in the baking, but you'll get some.
There'll still be a hint of
it,
though.
So yes, that's another possibility.
Well, we have callers online to visit with you, and let me give that number again. Still have one open line. 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call or email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And our first call is Lynn in Evansville, so let's go there. Hi, Lynn. Thanks for calling. Well, let's see.
My question, in fact, has to do with Norwegian Christmas bread. This is a recipe of my grandmother's that my mother had written for my sister and I. She's now passed, and my sister and I decided we would try to maintain the tradition. And we're running into some difficulty. The stuff isn't rising, and it's very dense. And we're thinking that maybe it has to do with the fact of the yeast and how it's handled. In my grandmother's and mother's time, they didn't have the rapid-rise, highly active yeast. So there's instructions about putting it in water at particular temperatures and dissolving it and so forth. But in recent instructions of other kinds, they say add the yeast to the dry ingredients. And I'm asking, how does one handle the yeast in this kind of bread?
Well, I'll bet that the old recipe called for cake yeast also.
It probably did. It doesn't say that. It just says yeast, but I bet.
Right. And you can still buy cake yeast. It's a lot simpler to get what's called dry active yeast. And that's the sort that you put in water.
Okay.
If you put the yeast into the dry ingredients, there you would want instant yeast. So that's actually a different yeast that's not meant to be put in water first.
Okay, so the rapid rise, Fleischmann's, quick rise or rapid rise or highly active yeast, that's just put in the dry ingredients.
Right. It should say, on the label that goes into the dry ingredients. And that should work fine, too. I use the sort, the the active dry yeast that you put into water first, and then you can actually see to make sure you've got yeast that's, in a sense, going to be active, because it'll foam up.
So the active dry you put in water.
Yes.
Very good. Mm-hmm.
That's the usual yeast you find in stores, yes.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. So there was a Christmas bread. What are some holiday favorite baked goods from different ethnic traditions?
Well, the one that's not baked, but it would be popular in Wisconsin, would be lefse. And that's I'm a Polish background, but family in the past was needed the lefse made, so I would make my Polish version of it, and that's essentially a potato pancake, which you can roll up with cinnamon sugar, etc. So that's something I make now. It's gotten to be a tradition for me, so I make the lefse every Christmas also.
And I think you brought lefse one year to the, and it was really good.
And we've had interesting conversations with people, because not everybody makes it with potatoes. Other people, it's made with cream. It's more a traditional pancake. Mm. Some people, it's savory. Some people, it's sweet. Yeah, so that's a whole nother...
Yeah, that's a whole nother piece of lefse there. Yeah.
Well, one interesting thing about heirloom recipes is that a lot of them don't have a lot of details, so it'll just be yeast and a pinch, this random amount of salt and so many handfuls of this and that. Yes,
you've talked about stolen in the past.
Ah, yes,
well.
Yes. My mother made stolen, and I grew up in Milwaukee, so it's a German thing, and that is a yeast bread, but it's got so much shortening in it that it's quite a different thing, and so it's very dense, and you could roll it up with cinnamon sugar and eggs, and a lot of people put fruits and such in it, but I never did that. But yeah, stollen is also on my list.
Yeah, and that comes from the tradition. It's Norwegian again, or is it?
No, I'm gonna guess that stollen is more a Eastern European German thing.
Okay, we're having some little difficulties with our phones here, but give us a call. We'll see if we can get you on at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR as well. Maybe that's a good thing to do since the phones seem to be having a little bit of problems with them, but we'll get them fixed and we'll get them running. Well, you're an expert bread maker too, obviously. And what are some tips for making a great loaf of bread every time?
It would probably depend on what sort of bread you wanted to make. If someone wants to make a very dense, heavy rye bread, for example, there you should really somehow find or develop a sour rye culture. Mm-hmm. That's the traditional way to make rye breads. If you want whole wheat bread, one of my recommendations there is not to go 100% whole wheat. It's a lot easier to use some white flour, especially if you're beginning at this. When I teach bread baking, when I do a healthy breads class, which I have coming up at MATC, I often have people use oatmeal and cook the oatmeal because it's then sticky. So people learning to do it, there's almost the stickiness of that, and it's apt to hold itself together. It's got a good flavor. So certain breads, I think, if you're a beginner, are easier to start with than something else.
Yeah, go ahead.
But the main ingredients are water and yeast, though you could do without yeast if you want sourdough, salt, and flour. You don't need to use sugar. This one had a lot. You don't need to use fats. This one has a lot because it's celebration bread. But in a sense, it's simple ingredients. It's just techniques.
Well, let's see if we can... I'm having some problems here. Let's see if we can get a caller online. No, we can't do it yet. We'll have to see here. We're having a little bit of phone troubles here, but we'll get them going. I want to talk about your class, too, because you got one coming up in January. And what goes on, and this is at Madison Technical College.
It's through Madison.
Madison College now it's called.
Madison College, or people know it as Madison Area Technical College. The adult and continuing education has food classes. I typically do a bread baking class every session. The one coming up January 10th will be healthy breads. Other times I do French baguettes. I just did one in December, sourdough breads.
Okay.
So mix
people of, learn how and actually probably bake a little as part of the class?
Part of the class, the really only hands-on part would be possibly some kneading.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But mainly I bring in different breads and they see part of the process and they get to, of course, sample some. So it's easy to seduce people with the taste and the smells. And, of course, I use butter.
You got to use butter.
Yes. Yes.
And actually, the bread classes that Paul teaches, we have a link up on our on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. So you can go there or just go to Madison College. You can find that information as well. But it's, when is it, January?
January 10th.
January 10th.
Yeah, I've been doing it Tuesday nights.
Tuesday nights. Okay. Arlene in New Berlin, we'll go to you now. Hi, Arlene.
Good morning. This is an interesting show on different kinds of breads. In regards to that lady that talked that she couldn't find cake yeast, my mother was from Austria, and she everything was made a pinch here, a pinch there. So when I make homemade bread by hand, it's with Red Star cake yeast, and you can get it at Pick and Save. And I use milk in my bread, which makes an off 2%, which makes a nice rich bread. But I also make what they call petitza, which is a walnut bread. You use 5 pounds of walnut. The bread raises 3 times. It's a very rich bread, and you have to use cake yeast. I can't convert to this powder stuff that's in a package. I rather use the cake yeast. That's what I'm used to, and I think that there should be stores to carry that stuff. I called Red Star, and I said, look, I make my recipes this way. I can't convert, and I'm an old-timer who can't change. So if you pursue it, you can get stores to carry it, because there still are a lot of women who bake, you know, by hand bread and use the old-fashioned recipes.
Now, you use, did you say 5 pounds of walnuts?
Yes, ground walnuts.
How many loaves are you making with that 5 pounds?
Well, you can make 5 nice round. My aunt used to make in a spring form pan the petitza, and then she'd make some loaves. But it's an all day job.
That's a lot of walnuts.
That is a lot of walnuts.
Can I tell you, it's very delicious.
Oh, I believe it. Yes.
Can I ask you another thing?
Sure.
Your guest. Sometimes my hands, you know, hurt because, you know, when you do the kneading and everything. When would you put, if the way I do it, when would I put the dough into the KitchenAid MixMaster to do the kneading? Because I let it raise in a pan, and then, of course, you have to knock it down. When do you put that dough into the MixMaster so that the dough hook can do the kneading?
Oh, well, you would do that immediately. As soon as you got all your ingredients together, some people would do it right in the container. I'd probably be apt to do it still on the the table, and then I'd get it kind of wet, and I'd plunk it in the bowl and add a little flour, and then start the hook going, and then maybe you'd have to adjust with a little more flour.
Oh, yeah, you have to. I mean, I go through 5 pounds of flour for 5 loaves of bread, and they are tight.
Yeah, so so you one thing is you do have to match the bowl to the hook. In other words, if you have a big bowl and a small amount of dough, it's not going to work.
Or vice versa,
small bowl and a lot of dough, it's also not going to work.
Yeah,
so that matching takes a bit of practice.
Okay, well, listen, you guys have a good holiday, and it was a great show. It's a great show.
Arlene, is there any way you could email me that or put on my Facebook that recipe for that bread with the walnuts?
I would have to have my daughter help me do it. I'm not good at doing it. I'm just learning the computer myself. But I can go online, look up your link, and find your address, and then maybe send it to you.
That would be wonderful. Go just to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and you could post it there, or have your daughter post it, because I'm telling you, I'm anticipating here, I'm going to get a whole bunch of requests for that recipe, and I'm not going to have it unless you send it.
Well, they made the pizza, and then there's another one of real apple strudel.
Oh, well.
You know, the kind where you read the newspaper through the dough?
Yeah.
She was Slovenian, so.
Well, send them both. Send them both if you can. But for sure the walnut one. And thank you so much, Arlene, for calling. Appreciate it.
And putting a ground up nuts or nut flour or nut meal in a bread is a very good way to sort of boost the nutritional qualities of it. You can do that with walnuts or almonds or hawthorns, et cetera. But that amount was astonishing.
Yeah, so that's why I want to see the recipe.
Here it was not just an additive. It was the star of the bread. And one thing about cake yeast is a lot of people do swear by it in terms of not just its is rising qualities, but the taste.
Yeah,
it is
a different taste.
And a lot of the old recipes will not say how much to use. It'll be like a penny's worth, which meant something at the time. But it's really a square of it, and I know you can still find it. The one warning is that you have to use it fairly quickly because it's wet.
Yeah.
In other words, it's not going to last in your refrigerator for a month.
Yeah. Paul Novak, baking instructor in the continuing education program at Madison College. He's the author of Baker's Dozen of Daily Breads and More. Talking about holiday baking, I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking holiday baking with Paul Novak, Larry Mueller here. Thanks so much for listening in. You can join us at 800-642-1234. Nicole in Williamsville did just that. So let's go to Nicole. Hi, Nicole.
Hi, Paul and Larry. How are you?
Great. Okay. Thank you for calling.
Great. Well, thank you for having the program. My husband and I both love good cinnamon babka, especially greens from New York City. And I have a Jewish holiday cookbook, and I keep looking at the recipe and looking at the recipe, and that looks really scary to make it. Is there any easy way to make what looks like a really complex bread?
Babka.
Well, in what way is it complex?
Just the ingredients and the rolling out and the swirling and it looks daunting.
Okay, because, for example, one Jewish bread, challah bread, is really just a basic egg braid with maybe glazes, et cetera. So a lot of holiday breads are actually easy to do in the sense that they're mainly white flour.
Mm-hmm.
So the kneading of them is not complicated. It might be the other steps that's complicated, or the rolling, or the shaping, or the this or the that.
Mm-hmm. But what's babka, anyway?
It's a Jewish holiday bread. It's not a Hanukkah bread, but it's a sweet bread. If you look at it, it looks like the perfect swirl of either cinnamon and chocolate are the two most popular flavors. You can get poppy seed, too, but I think that's actually Polish. But it is, it's like, I want to say it's kind of like brioche with a moist cinnamon swirl through it and a little bit of heaven on the front of the tongue.
Okay. There is, for example, a Polish poppy seed cake, bread. You know, it's almost hard to tell what it is. And they're usually sweet, and there's a swirl in them. A stollen often has rolled up with a swirl of egg white and cinnamon sugar, et cetera. And then you're almost starting to get a little almost into pastries there with some of those breads.
And this is really swirled. It's not just like a circle swirl. This swirls all over the place.
Right. So my way of looking at it would be to get the look of it is going to take practice, but it's probably going to still taste good, even if it doesn't look as good.
You know what? I can close my eyes and eat it just fine. Good advice.
So,
that's right. Right, Nicole.
And a lot of this is experimentation and practice and figuring out what, how you like it, not necessarily what is it supposed to look like in a professional bakery.
Yeah.
Good
right.
point.
There you go.
Good point. Thank you.
Thanks, Nicole. Thanks a lot for calling. And Tom in Oconomowoc, on to you now. Hi, Tom.
Hey, good morning to both of you. Boy, what a timely topic here. I just played around with a new cookie recipe this year. These are called orange crescent cookies. And I followed the recipe just to a T, at least I thought I did. But anyways, when I brought the cookies out of the oven, left them cool for about a minute or two, and then moved them to the cooling rack. I mean, when you pick up these things, they just disintegrate in your hand. I mean, they're so dry, so brittle. And I'm wondering if either the recipe was wrong or if I did something wrong. The recipe, as I recall, called for about 4 sticks of butter, which seemed to be an awful lot to me. I'm just wondering if that was part of the problem. Can you help me out with dry cookies?
It would be hard it would be hard for me to imagine them being too dry because of the butter. part of cookies is the technique, and that could be your pan. For example, sometimes people use the pans that have been insulated, an air pocket between the two, which won't give you a good crust, or good bottom. Whereas you use another sort of a pan, it will. People aren't aware that the edge of a pan, you know, what people think of as a cookie sheet, would actually have to be flat with no lip on the end. What is usually used is what really call a jelly roll pan, which has and how much you have on the sides will affect really how it bakes. So the pan is crucial. And is it steel? Is it aluminum? What's your temperature? Be a lot of factors. What I want to experiment with at some point is ammonia. There's an ammonium-based leavening agent that's very old-fashioned that gives you crisp cookies. So some people want crisp cookies as opposed to the chewy, doughy kind. So.
Oh, I was going to just say, I'm wondering if it has something to do with the handling of these things, because but it was a sort of like a refrigerated cookie also. You had to divide the dough in half and then press it down to about a half inch, wrap it in plastic, put it in the refrigerator for about 2 hours. Then you bring it out, you roll the dough out, you cut the cookie shapes out, and the dough just wouldn't even peel back and leave my shapes. It just all started picking up together. It was just very, very hard dough to work with. So I'm just wondering, maybe I needed more flour or something. I don't know.
See, the flour, I think, would make it even drier.
It would make it worse.
So, it's hard for me to tell because I'm not sure what it's supposed to be like or what, you know, you don't want it dry, but other people, crisp would be okay. For example, if you make macaroons, some people like those to be dry, and some people like those to be very, very chewy.
I like them chewy.
Where you can almost, you can tell you're eating a, part of a coconut almost.
Well, the recipe also called for powdered sugar. Could I substitute regular sugar? Would that help at all? Was the powdered sugar maybe too fine that it caused these cookies to?
The powdered sugar in a recipe like that does seem odd to me.
Yeah.
So I might go with granulated sugar next
time. Give that a try.
Yeah.
And don't worry about the butter creating the dryness, because if anything, it'll be just the opposite.
Yeah, that's what I'd say, too.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. PJ in Oshkosh, on to you. Hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you. I just wanted to call. I'm a gluten-free baker in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and your guest had mentioned sourdough, and I do a lot with sourdough gluten-free bread, and I just wanted to let listeners know a lot of people think that gluten-free bread tends to be really dry and granular and crumbly, and I've really found that sourdough bread tends to really make it a lot moister and more, closer to what people are used to with traditional wheat breads.
But if you're using wheat for your sourdough, you're still going to have gluten in there, aren't you?
Oh, and that's the thing, too, is I, you know, a lot of people are really surprised that they've been able to create a sourdough starter with gluten-free flours.
Okay, so, so what are you using? Are you using barley or rice? Or?
Oh, no, barley.
Barley has some gluten in it, yes.
It does, yeah. But the primary flour that I use in my sourdough starter is sorghum flour.
Okay.
And it works really well. And then it's, you know, after I've got it took a little while to get it started. It's more temperamental than what I've experienced in the past with, like, a wheat sourdough starter. But it's still, it's not the same. It's not that kind of, like, a spongy type
ball
that you would get.
I'm glad you mentioned sorghum because a grain sorghum is makes a wonderful flour. I use it in a lot of my breads as an additive. And there's a sorghum flour company out there that on the bag has a wonderful recipe for a gluten-free sorghum bread. And what makes it so fascinating is that it's a yeast bread. It's not not a baking powder bread.
And
it's got potato starch and, you know, xanthan gum and, you know, other things for as binders. But I tend not to do gluten-free breads because I can tolerate gluten. But anyways, it was in most of them are baking powder breads, and this was a yeast bread. So if you're doing if you're doing sourdoughs, it's like people who need to do without gluten have a lot a lot of places to experiment nowadays.
Yeah, there's a lot of options out there, and the other thing too is people I think get caught up in some of the basic white rice flour and the starches that are common in the commercial breads, but sorghum, millet, brown rice, things like that are really they can really make some nice
breads,
healthy whole grain breads.
What's the name of your company, PJ?
It's called Rustic Kitchen, so we distribute breads through the Fox Valley and then down in Madison at the co-ops, actually at Willie Street Co-ops.
Oh, okay. So and once again, you're in Oshkosh.
Yeah, and so the sourdough bread that we have is available at this co-op, as well as the yeast bread that we make too. So,
and again, the name of your company?
Rustic Kitchen.
Rustic Kitchen.
I've always used a lot of different grains in my bread. So even if you're not looking for a gluten-free bread, I do encourage people to experiment with all the other grains, because I personally think some people are developing intolerances to wheat because they eat too much wheat.
I agree. I get a lot of people coming up to me at the farmer's market saying, I don't have any gluten intolerance. Should I go gluten-free? And I usually tell them, no, I don't think that that's necessary. It's expensive and it's hard.
But
I do tell them that, you know, having that variety of grain.
Yes. And
really healthy and will prevent some long-term problems.
Right. Rye has some gluten, but it's a different gluten. And people used to use a lot more oats and barley and nowadays millet and quinoa and amaranth and et cetera.
Yeah, those ancient grains are great for people. And then the other thing, too, is, there's some problems with baking gluten-free. It does create some issues that you have to learn, how to work with the doughs and stuff. But there's also some advantages. I mean, you can't overhandle the dough the way you can with gluten, so you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, it's another world.
It is.
And there are people who are allergic to the carbohydrates in wheat, and this is why some people go with kamut or spelt. So to me, the variety in breads is the way more people should go.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, PJ.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Yeah, I know. For our hunting, deer hunting crew, there's one of our guys has to have. He needs gluten free. So I know I always on opening morning of our season, the night before, I make one of these egg dishes where you make it up the night before. I make a couple of pans of that, and one of the pans I use a gluten free bread.
Okay.
And. Okay. Frankly, the guys can't. I don't think the guys can tell the difference, in a dish like that.
Yeah, yeah. And talking about other grains, one of my favorite breads is pumpernickel, and there are different kinds of pumpernickel bread. But one pumpernickel, one old fashioned kind, I used, and this is what mine uses: potatoes and cornmeal, besides the sour rye culture, etc. So there's wheat in it, but you've got these other grains.
Yeah.
And the story was that long time ago, when wheat was scarce, people would be you know, it's what I do, but people have been doing this for a long time, purposely put in the other grains so that you didn't have to have as much of what was at sometimes expensive wheat flour. And there's I wanted to mention there's a WORT has a cook new cookbook out, and if you're interested, my pumpernickel bread recipe is
in there.
Is in there.
It's WORT Radio, which is a community supported radio in Madison. I probably just go to their website.
Yeah, the book just came out, a very nicely produced book. Yes.
So WORT Radio, go to that website and you'll find that book. I bet.
Yes.
All right. Well, I don't mind promoting another radio station sometimes when they got something really good like that. We have an email that asks, how do you influence the texture of bread? My bread is half whole wheat flour and half bread flour. I assume that means white. Often I add a raisin and nut mix with some melted butter, milk, and egg and active dry yeast. I get a texture that's quite fine, but I would like to get more coarse texture. And I think which comes from more and bigger bubbles in the second rise.
If you'd want to change the texture, one way would be to take out oil, take out sugar, take out eggs, take out milk, and have it more just the flour. Or you can go the other route and put in bran, extra wheat germ, polenta, coarser form of cornmeal. You could put those additives in. So, and then what kind of whole wheat flour do you use? I mean, you can get more coarsely ground or not.
Yeah.
Just like
yeah.
some pumpernickel breads are just pumpernickel meal, which is a coarsely ground rye meal. So, different ways to approach that.
Bonita in Muscadet, it's on to you now. Hi.
Hi, good morning. I am also a cake yeast user for making homemade bread.
Yeah.
And I just want to put out there that if you can't find it, that when you do find it, buy extra and freeze it. It works wonderful.
So you freeze your cake yeast, eh?
Yes. I bring my cake yeast home. I stick it in the freezer. And when I'm going to bake bread, I have to know ahead of time, of course. And I get it out the night before, put it in my measuring cup, and let it thaw in the refrigerator, and in the morning it's ready to go, and I have no problems with it.
Yeah, yeast is just sort of inactive, in a sense, in the refrigerator somewhat, and you freeze it, it's protected even more. And you can do that with dry yeast, too. Mm-hmm. When you get instant yeast, it's going to be in a big, big bag.
Yeah.
And freeze almost all of that and just keep a little bit in your refrigerator.
Right, because I know people don't realize that they can freeze it, but you can, and it works wonderful.
Yes,
and you can buy it. You can buy cake yeast at a lot of different places, can't you?
We only have one store in Southwest Wisconsin that I'm aware of that I can purchase it at.
Oh, where do we get it?
I get it at Bernstead's in Richland Center.
Oh, and in Madison, Paul?
I have not looked lately. It used to be at Metcalf's.
We'll have to look around and see. Yeah. But I bet Metcalf still has it. I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much, Bonita, for calling. Appreciate it. And Chuck from Green Bay emailed to say he has a German Kuchen, is it? Kuchen?
Yes.
That is rolled out very thin coated with cinnamon, sugar, butter, and nuts. It has a cup of butter and a cup of liquid to 4 cups of flour. Comes out dry when baked, even with all that. Any idea why? Bake it for 15 minutes. How do I make it moist?
Well, one way would be to not roll it out as thin.
Yeah, that's true.
I remember when we were doing the Lefse show one time, somebody called in and said, in America, it's a big deal with the Norwegian Americans to get your Lefse as thin as possible. It's not such a big deal in Norway.
Sarah in Zion, Illinois. Wait a second here. We'll drop that one. Here we go. Hi, Sarah. Zion, Illinois. Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you. I love to bake, even though I can't eat sugar anymore, but I do it for my family, and so this is fun. But I have a question about a cake. But first of all, I just wanted to throw out there that I found this new cookie recipe, a few years ago, and now it's our family's favorite cookie, and it's Mexican. It's pecan cookies called polvorones, And I'm telling you, it's just people. When people eat it, they go, "Wow, I've never had anything like this. It's delicious."
Well, see, now you can't say things like that, Sarah, and then just go on to something else. You have to say, okay, and I would be happy to send it to your Facebook page.
I'd love to, sure.
Put it on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show.
Okay, great, thanks.
And here's another recipe with nuts in it. I mean, pecans now. I mean, they really add not just nutrition, but moisture and a sort of solidity to various products.
Yeah. But you had another question, or
I do. I have this urge to make a cake that I don't know if really, I've never seen a recipe like this, but I'm thinking I could adapt something, and I wonder if you think it would work. I just want to make a banana bundt cake with coffee flavoring and rum and then chocolate chips. What do you think?
I mean, what the expression, whatever floats your boat, yes.
I guess I was worried about the texture maybe getting too smushy or something.
Well, it could be. You'll just have to try it and see.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't sort of censor yourself beforehand. You know, try it and see what happens. Or maybe hold back on the quantities and just put in small quantities of each of those and see how it works.
Do you think I should buy a coffee extract instead of, like, you know, making coffee? Or,
well, oftentimes in cakes, people will actually use espresso, powdered espresso.
Okay.
Because you get more potency to
okay.
it. So that's a common thing in breads. And coffee and chocolate go together, so, yeah. and rum, yeah, so.
And then, okay, my aunt used to make holes with toothpicks and pour rum over it, but I wonder if I should do that or go with rum extract.
Oh, I have a recipe for rum cake, and yes, you poke the holes in it and you put the rum on it, and,
okay.
Yeah, and
okay.
Because it really makes it moist. It's
yeah.
not just the flavoring; it literally makes it moist.
Okay, great.
Right. Thank you, don't forget to send that recipe. Now.
I will. I'll do it. Okay.
Thanks, Sarah. appreciate your call, and. Oh, my goodness, Paul. Thank you so much.
Oh,
boy,
thanks,
the
Larry.
Time flew.
Yes, yes.
Thanks for bringing that Ulacaca. And I know there are many Wisconsin Public Radio employees that are just eager to get their teeth into
yes.
some of that bread.
Yes, I'll cut some for them. Yes.
And Paul's class coming up. He's got a class in bread baking in the Madison College in January. If you want to find out some more, just go to Madison College website or just go to my Facebook page. At the Larry Mueller Show, I've got a direct link to Paul and those workshops that he does. That's not the only one he'll be doing coming up. Thanks again, Paul. And
thanks, Larry.
Thank you so much. And coming up, we're going to talk about an old-fashioned Christmas. The tinsel, the gingerbread men, the Raggedy Ann, all the old songs with our next guest, Rochelle Pennington. Here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.